Is your business plan very unclear and you're tirelessly working at a low-paying career? Let's help you get out of the rut and let go of the fear. It's time to excel into the million-dollar stratosphere. Now, here's your host of The Balanced Millionaire, who will take you there, Eileen Mendel.
Hello, everyone. This is Eileen Mendel, your host of The Balanced Millionaire. And we have a great show for you today. We've got Rosalinda Randall here as my first guest. And after the break, I'll be talking to you about tips that you can use in your business. And this is all available on my ebook, so stay tuned. I'm going to introduce now our first guest, Rosalinda Randall. She has been combating rude behavior and spreading civility for over a decade. She focuses on communication techniques, presence, and professional behavior, helping individuals to interact more effectively with a lot less drama, potential for harassment, and losing their individuality. She's written a book, which I highly recommend, called Don't Burp in the Boardroom, Handling Uncommonly Common Workplace Dilemmas. And here she is, and I'll have her talk a little further about all these topics, and I'm sure you'll enjoy them. She's been a regular on KTLA 5 and Good Day Sacramento, so she is funny, but she's also... It's a serious topic, and I think it's a topic that is worth talking about. So welcome to our show, Rosalinda.
Great. Thank you so much for the kind introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, so Rosalinda, how did you get into this social etiquette world?
Well, I want to say it was my upbringing, but we did not have finger bowls and cloth napkins except for Christmas. It was a very middle-class upbringing. However, I received something that I find even more valuable than, you know, knowing which fork to pick up, which was a foundation of really, you know, ethics and principles of behavior. And that is really what I base everything I write and do and live and speak on, just personal codes of ethics. And that is, I just think that if we all adopted, and they'd be different for everybody, we could use those to guide our tongues and fingers as we post on social media. But to further that, since I had that foundation and I wanted my own business and my own hours as I was raising our sons, I just fell into etiquette. It was just sort of, I was reading a book and I started volunteering, and then I was trained and certified, find the opportunity, and turned it into a business, which is now, you know, going on 20 years of doing this. So, yeah, it allows me, because I know you focus a lot on entrepreneurship. It allowed me to do that and grow and learn and get, you know, a few bumps along the road, but it was all worth it.
So tell me a little bit about some of the things you talk about in your new book. What are some things that we should be aware of?
Well, you know, I talked to so many different people, and there is a common thread, and one of the ones, or a couple of the topics that I hear most of people either address or bring up or complain about, is really communication. And then if, you know, there's time, we can go into the, you know, sexual harassment, which would include communicating with a different gender, and then also different generations. That's also very delicate sometimes in the workplace. But communication conflicts, and I think we have, you know, I always say we have so many more methods and ways of communicating since social media, but it increased different ways to have conflict as well. To me, what I've learned in talking with people and just my research is, a lot of times we have an agenda when we're communicating with someone. And if you have that agenda, the conversation is not going to go anywhere, because, you know, whether it's you are focused on making your point, you're not going to listen to what that person's saying or try and understand, not agree. Understanding is not agreeing with someone's, but understand their point of view. If our focus is trying to prove them wrong, we're not going to listen to anything and maybe find something that we have in common, or maybe that is right that I hadn't thought about. If we're focused on convincing them or challenging them, the conversation isn't going to go anywhere. And a lot of people are there to, you know, I see it on social media. A lot of times somebody posts something and they go somewhere else and the person has to say, please read my point and stick to the point. A lot of times we use that platform to get our, again, our thoughts, our agenda, our whatever across. And that does not make for a productive conversation.
So in this day and age, because of what's going on the internet, in the various social media platforms, there's so much casual language and people forget that they're in the workplace. And so the attacking, the bullying, things like that, how do you deal with, I mean, how does one deal with that? I call it the low blows or blow below the belt, you know, whatever. It's just, how does that work out these days? Maybe it's between colleagues at the same level where they're competing to move up the chain in a company. And so they're attacking each other, or how does one calm that situation down or deal with that in a company?
It's a personal choice. You know, I can give different options and I'd be happy to, but really when it comes down to when you're challenged or someone is saying something nasty, bullying, whatever it is, we have a choice on how to respond to that. And I usually go to a couple of questions. Is one, will it help? If I respond, will it help the situation? And is it necessary to respond? Many times it is not necessary. If someone is attacking me, the only time that I feel that I need to respond is if it's about my reputation, because really when you strip everything down, you take my house away, my car, my job, everything, all I have is my reputation. And I guard that, with all my heart. So that is something, but then there's also a way to approach it. You know, not all people are approachable or want to hear it. And if I get that sense from someone, I just shut down and stop the conversation and just say, thank you for your opinion. I appreciate that. Or I think we're going to have to end the conversation now. Those are my strategies. Again, it depends on the relationship with that person. You mentioned, you know, we're vying for the same position and the attacks start coming. Well, if it's on company time and company email, I can do something about that and, you know, bring in our boss or HR. What I advise people to do, first of all, is if it's possible, face-to-face, privately, without announcing it to everyone, meet with the person and say, what's going on? How do we get here? Take the we and the I think we all have heard that when you're doing the conversation. And just say, did I start this? Did I do something to provoke this? Please let me know. That way you're not challenging the person. And you're coming in with, I'm trying to solve this method, not or approach, not you better stop this or I will approach. So those are just some ways to initially. Now, if it's getting vulgar and out of hand and threatening, immediately stop answering and you know, get human resources involved immediately if it's on company time. But if it's on your social media, that's another thing. How involved can companies get? And there's just a lot of legalities around there. If it's affecting the employee and their ability to exist at work and get their job done, then the company does step in.
Now, what about using the computer for personal things during the work time or even the work computer? When I came into my office a few times, this was way back quite a few years ago, I would come in And I found a porno, I would find porno sites on my computer. And I know, like, my superiors would come around and look at the computers or whatever, see what was downloaded, you know, in the after hours, whatever. And it was like, this is not me. I haven't done this. What about, what's the policy against abusing, you know, computer time, you know, using your work computer for doing things on there that are personal and shouldn't be done at work?
Well, you know, really, if you do think about it, you're getting paid to do the job. You do get your breaks, the 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the afternoon, or whatever it is these days. But that's when you can get your personal things done. You are still using their computer. So there should be a sense of, I want a judgment on the things that you are shopping for. You know, if it's vacation or a new patio set or something, that's fine. Most companies overlook that. But what they get concerned with is how much time you're spending on there. And normally companies, unless there is a reason for it, will not go in to your computer and look. But if you're not getting your job done and it's a pattern, if you're always, talking and not in your office, not in your cubicle where you're supposed to be, they want to see kind of where your time is. But also employees have gotten very savvy. They don't use the assigned laptop on the computer. They'll use their phones on there, and then the company can't track it. But, I had one person tell me, like, I was hitting a button, Googling something, and I accidentally hit, and it was this porn site, and the sound was on, and it just came on, and people in the cubicle next to him heard these passionate sounds, if you will.
Yes.
And, he said, I was trying to click it and click it. You know, when you're trying so hard, that's when you just can't click the right button. But eventually he said that the way he did it was immediately contacted his boss, sent him an email, said, look, this happened. I'm off of it. You can check the time that I stayed on. And that was taken care of. You know, I think most people are smart enough not to do that. Although I think there was a scandal, Microsoft, especially, I think specifically up in Seattle, where they do download a lot of porn, and there was a lot of, that going on, and they were overlooking it. And I think the reason, or one of the most popular reasons, was, well, they spend a lot of time alone and they work long hours. So, we let the employees do that. But yeah, so, you know, I just think that a little bit of discretion and judgment is what I recommend to most employees.
Yeah, it just surprised me that anybody would, you know, try looking at porn, you know, on a company computer, and so without feeling that you're going to get caught. I mean, that's really risky. And also, I've noticed, like, my computer was used once, my office computer was used once to do job searches. And I was like, oh my God, I hope my boss doesn't realize somebody else was using my computer, gotten on my computer to do some job searches. And how do you deal with that if you catch somebody looking for a job on a job site?
Yeah, that's a very sneaky coworker there of yours, using somebody else's computer to look for work. I had something similar to that. An employee updated their LinkedIn profile, and if you don't turn the privacy settings, you know, I guess it's announced to everyone. But anyway, their boss happened to see it. Maybe they were looking through it and commented, called them in and said, I see that you're updating your LinkedIn. Is there something we should know about? Are you leaving? So, you know, employers can do some search. They're not really encouraged to search online to see what you're doing. Or, for example, people calling in sick or saying, you know, someone died in their family, and then they're posting on Instagram like, ooh, yay, Disneyland, having a great time. Those are some of the downfalls. But if you don't lie and you have some ethics that you live by, that will not happen. Either that or just don't post. But I think the sensationalism and the wanting to share your life kind of overpowers your good judgment sometimes. So just like posting things on social media, you know, political, go ahead. You know, companies can't stop you. It's freedom of speech. But it's how you comment and the words you use that can, you know, get you a little talk with the boss on Monday.
So I was wondering, because it's kind of an open public thing right now that all these hearings are going on with the government and there's people taking sides, you know, pro-Trump, anti-Trump, pro-Democrats, anti-Republicans. And people want to talk about the news, but how do you deal with that in the workplace? Because it could get heated. It could get really heated.
Oh, my goodness. Can it ever? I mean, relationships end. They don't even have to have a heated conversation. I know people personally who learned about a longtime colleague, even, you know, had some friendship going on there, that they, you know, whatever, which way, I can't remember now, but voted for Trump, let's just say, because that seems to be the worst thing you could do. And they ended the relationship on that. And that's fine. You can, you know, you can do whatever you want. But after so many years, I think they'd known each other for 7 years, had done some business together. So it really is up to the individual person that if you feel less strongly about that, you're going to end relationships. I know family members who don't talk to each other anymore. But in the workplace, the company, some companies have a policy in their policies and procedures manual against talking about, you know, religion and politics. Now, they can't stop people. But what I tell people, if you're in a group, say you have a, you know, familiar relationship with a couple of colleagues, coworkers, and you're in the lunchroom and you guys happen to be commenting in a low voice, you know, just a normal voice, about the political scene and what you think, that's fine. But if you know that a coworker who has an opposing view happens to kind of join the group, it to me is just a polite thing to do to change the subject. There are so many more things that we could be talking about, so that you don't provoke that person or make them feel like, you know, hey, we don't want you here because this is what we think. That's when the trouble starts. But say you get into a political conversation, someone just point blank asks you or points a finger at you and says, you people that vote this way on whatever issue. My personal advice is to stand there, let them give whatever they want, as long as, again, they don't get vulgar and all that stuff, and just say, you know, thanks for sharing your opinion. There are a lot of ways you can get out of it. It's just, oh, I plead the fifth, or it's not an appropriate setting, or I don't do politics at work, sorry. And you change the conversation and walk away. You know, it's pretty simple. If you don't want to engage, you don't have to.
So what if a company, there's a lot of computer companies that hire mainly male computer programmers, et cetera. And sometimes, you know, there's a talk, you know, talking about women or whatever, there's boy, you know, kind of men talk, boy talk. And maybe there's one or two women there and the women feel uncomfortable. So how does that play out as far as keeping the conversation so that there's no, you know, offense to women? In a male-dominated situation.
Yes, and there's still many industries where it is male-dominated. Well, either that company is not doing a good enough job of bringing in training and reminding their employees of, you know, taboo topics these days. Also, it is a poor judgment on the gentleman who continues. Say that it is gentleman and they want to talk about, you know, whatever, like you said, boy talk. That's great. But once another person enters, especially a female, it's time to just go, hey, you know, Barbara, how's it going? And just let it go. But also, I've had conversations with men who said, I don't want to hear that kind of talk at work. I'm not saying I don't talk with my boys, you know, on the weekend like that, but at work, I just don't like taking a chance. Well, as a good coworker, if you walk by and you hear your other coworkers chit-chatting about anything that you think could be construed as inappropriate, I say you kind of discreetly, pardon me, go up to them and say, hey, you know, I don't mind, but if so-and-so, anybody else walks by and hears you guys, you might end up in HR, just letting you know. It's sort of a good neighbor thing to do to make them aware, because sometimes you just get caught up in a conversation and it goes all these places and you're unaware at the moment that you shouldn't be talking about that. But say I'm a woman and I walk in and they don't stop, I can, instead of reporting them right away and running to HR and filing a claim with the EEOC, I would say, guys, hey, you know, I'm here. I don't want to talk about this. And use a little bit of humor. And I'm sure in most cases, they'll go, oh, hey, sorry, you know, and just go on. Just downplay it a little.
I was wondering, with so much freedom now and using, you know, marijuana and it being legal, What are the policies now? I mean, as far as limiting that, the usage of marijuana, I know people do have cancer or they do have, you know, different issues where, you know, it's a medical reason, but what if they come in and they've been smoking and, you know, the behavior is a little off? What happens in that situation? Or let's say they during their break time, they're out there smoking, you know, and that's their free time.
Well, I want to, you know, a disclaimer. I'm not offering legal advice, but I am aware of what some of the new laws are. But again, it's just to repeat what I have read from the EEOC and various attorneys that talk about this, is that depending on the state, you really need to find out an attorney who is very well versed on the laws of that state. But marijuana is still illegal, considered an illegal drug at work. Now, if your workplace finds out that, hey, you just had some marijuana and now they want to start drug testing, they can't do that once they just because they found out, unless it's affecting the work, they have a talk with you. There are some states that will allow them to then implement a drug testing, a random drug testing for that specific employee. But again, it varies from state to state. But all in all, it is still considered, if you are impaired, it's the same as coming in drunk to work. The company can fire you. Most judges in the research that I've done have said, let's just take each case individually. Perhaps firing is a little bit extreme unless they is a pattern. Unless they're not doing their job, then you should have been documenting this all along. But putting them on probation and initiating a drug testing program or asking them to go to a drug rehab, those are all things that employers are considering before firing. Again, if they've done something under the influence, then of course they can apply the at-will firing. As they would with anything else. But, you know, it depends. I had someone say that, well, my boss smokes. You know, I see him go out and just take one or two puffs. If you didn't know it, you probably wouldn't know, but he caught him doing that. If you want to report your boss, go ahead. My philosophy is always discreetly approach the person with whom you have a problem with or are trying to help or warn and say, hey, I've seen you do this. I feel that I need to report it. I don't want to. Could you just never do it again? And now the boss either will never do it again or be more discreet and the employee can go on with his life. But, you know, it's becoming a problem that, you know, human resources is now having to deal with and put into their policies and procedures manual. But if it is a medical, like you brought up, then yes, the employers do have to accommodate if it is a medical reason for using marijuana during the work hours.
That would make a lot of sense, you know, because nowadays, you know, people do have some medical issues. However, you know, some people, it's more acceptable to say, like, you know, I was diagnosed with, you know, an ailment and this is the prescription my doctor gave me. So people can accept that, you know, if there's a true diagnosis there.
Yes.
Can I ask you then, how do you go about into companies? Do you get hired as to do workshops or do you give a talk or how do you come in to work with companies to let them know about, you know, the social etiquette and make especially the young millennials, et cetera, who may not have had the work experience in a more formal environment, and maybe it's a startup company, or you know, it's still a young company and it's growing very fast. So how do you come in there and tell the employees, you know, what's proper, what's improper these days, you know, let them be aware of it?
I want to say that 75% of the time that I get called in is to address a particular concern. The last two, for example, have been lack of hygiene and poor attire when visiting a client. They just don't know. And that one is a very sensitive subject that even HR cringes to talk to someone, because sometimes it's a cultural thing. It's a religious belief, you know, so that, and I dress it up and talk about how to present yourself and all of those things. And then the other portion recently has been to come in and support sexual harassment. Like how can both genders communicate or without losing their personality. So most of the time, as I said, it's to address issues or improve their communication. Another one, just how do we talk to each other, the staff in front of when clients come in? Because a lot of times we go, hey, get me that, and yell, and there's a client walking in, and that just doesn't give a good impression. So the majority is on that. And, you know, then colleges call me in for, you know, networking. You were talking about millennials, people going out into the workforce, business dining even. I have done a little bit of that too, to prepare.
Well, thank you very much, Rosalinda. We've run out of time. How can the audience or the listeners contact you so they can learn more and find out more about what you do and perhaps bring you into their company?
Very simple, rosalindarandall.com. Everything's there. Keep it simple is my philosophy.
Oh, yeah, I believe that too. Well, we're going to go to a break now, and we'll be right back. Thank you, everybody, for listening in to our guest, Rosalinda Randall. And thank you very much for coming on to our show, Rosalinda, today. You've really given us some nice, valuable information about proper etiquette in the workplace.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Former highly paid corporate insider and expert in scaling businesses for over three decades, Eileen Mendel is a serial entrepreneur, business consultant, renowned speaker, and author. Tune into The Balanced Millionaire on BBSRadio.com weekly on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to learn the secrets to working fewer hours and achieving financial breakthroughs, increased revenue, and prosperity while maintaining personal and professional balance and harmony. You can also hear us on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Spotify. To schedule a private consultation about your business, call or text 760-450-6133 or visit InnerEdgeInternational.com, 760-450-6133, or visit InnerEdgeInternational.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Eileen Mendel from The Balanced Millionaire. We're back from our break. And in this last segment of our show, I'm going to talk to you about my ebook that is posted on my homepage of my website, www.thebalancedmillionaire.com. And you could download this for free. Just go to that homepage and just go hit the link. So the ebook is called The Secrets to Spur High Business Growth That No One Ever Talks About. I have been on many, many and many, many lectures, conferences, et cetera, throughout my 30 years in business, where they teach you, you know, the marketing, they teach you, you know, how to sell and, you know, how to keep track of your numbers and everything else. But they don't tell you some tips that actually are so critical to moving your business to another level. And so I'm going to talk to you today about a few of those tips, and you can go in and get the book, and it's just a small guide, and I'll probably expand that later. But let me tell you what they are, a few of the tips The first one is to make friends with the press. And that is because you want to get quoted as an expert. My suggestion is early on in your creation of your new business, you want to see if you can notify your local business magazines and journals. Let them know that you're out there, you have a certain type of expertise. Start networking with those people, sit down to lunch with them, invite them to your office or invite them to coffee, and tell them a little bit about your background, what you can do, what your expertise is. Everybody has a certain specialty or expertise, otherwise they wouldn't be running a business. It's something that makes you special and makes you stand out and differentiate you from your competitors. So to get the media attention, you also want to put together some kind of packet that you can leave them with a listing of some of the things that you have been involved with, any conferences that you've spoken at, or any newspaper articles or magazine articles that you have written, or something that you have done and achieved, any kind of honors or medals or certifications that you have, so that they know that you're the one to go to make a comment when a particular situation occurs, that you're the expert that can get quoted. And so that's one thing. The next thing I wanted to broach with you is just like I've had my podcast running and I bring in guests, you can also apply to be guests on podcasts. You don't have to run your own podcast to be a guest. So my recommendation is, because this is airtime that allows you to talk about yourself and show your expertise, you want to give yourself some worldwide exposure. And the nice thing about podcasts, they are syndicated on platforms such as iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, as well as some other platforms. And so worldwide, anybody can download those shows that you've done in the past, those archives, at any time, anywhere in the world, by going to a platform and that might be carrying your show. And more, for instance, my show is being picked up by other platforms. So even though my show has certain platforms we already are syndicated on, I get picked up by other platforms. Also, I'm a guest on other shows where I'm on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and other platforms. So if you type my name out, you'll find me, you know, on various, not just through my own website or by social media, but on other areas of the web. So this is really important to get the exposure that you need. Another tip I have to give you is what I call slice the salami. Now, slice the salami means don't offer the kitchen sink, so to speak. Don't offer the full Chinese, don't offer the whole menu to your customers, because it'll confuse them. So when your customers contact you, or let's say new prospects, let's say it's a cold call, you want to find out, first of all, where they're at in their business and what they're looking for. If they don't understand what they're looking for, you can start, you know, at a certain level, you can make some assumptions, but you only want to offer, you know, a focused number of your products or services at a time. And you want to divide that up so that you can upsell later on. So what you do is you divide your offering into what makes sense, into different segments, and then you can mix and match and upsell those packages, or sell them as packages or single units later on, depending on what's appropriate to your client and their budget and where they're going and what they're looking for. So that's another one of my tips. And I have more information on these, you know, that goes at more length in describing it, so you'll remember how to use these. The next one I have is called the three-legged stool. Now, the three-legged stool means that everyone should have at least three different product categories, because if you're just selling one category, one thing, and it's very limiting as to what you can offer your clients. So you have to think about, you know, what your clients are actually used to. Are they used to having something in a booklet form? Maybe you can put out some booklets to help them, or guides. Are they used to having something on an MP3 or a video where they can learn a step-by-step way to do a certain thing and make it memorable? Or they can actually do a one-on-one consultation and talk with you, you know, once or twice a week to learn what they need to learn. And that way you have multiple ways to deliver your product or service, and you also have multiple products and services, and they can be, these things can also be overlapping, but it's also targeted very much to your client base. Or you can differentiate a version of those products for a different client base. For instance, you know, you might have a product for CEOs, but you also might have a product for those in marketing, vice presidents and directors of marketing in particular. So, or you can, same thing with products. You might have a product that is at a very, very high level, but then you might sell something that is not quite so high price and a little bit lower level. So, you know, the startup company or smaller company can afford that. So always think about how can you offer more than one sort of product or service and different ways, a few different ways to deliver it. And you really have to listen carefully when you're in a sales conversation to understand which is most appropriate to offer at that time. And it may be that your customer may end up buying, you know, things from all three product and service areas. So, or once you get the three-legged, you can go on to a four, five, or six-legged stool, but I don't recommend that right away. I would say first stick with your core product and some offshoots of the core product or service. My next tip is aim for 10 committed clients. I say committed clients, so I'll define that, that will come back to you time and time again for more work. And remember, there is something called the Pareto principle, that 80% of your business, of your revenues, and of your work that you'll be doing will come from 20% of your client base. So when you start working, you'll find out that the top 20% of your clients, and if you have more clients, you know, that'll be the top 20%, of course, is only 2 out of the 10. But once you develop 10 or more clients, you'll know like those top 20% that will keep coming back loyally time and time again, and they will have growing needs. They will be wanting to do more and more business with you, or if you're an accountant or a bookkeeper and they like you, they'll be continuing to work with you time and time again, whereas the other 80%, you know, may come again and go again and come again and go again, or may never come back after they've done maybe a few years of work with you. They may jump to their cousin or somebody else who, you know, the next person. But you'll know your 20% over time who's loyal to your business. And it doesn't mean that you'll only have 20% all the time, but that's the way the Pareto principle works. But you may, you know, end up with 30% loyal clients over time as you grow to a larger and larger business. So just keep that in mind. Once you get up to 10 clients, things start getting a little bit steadier in your cash flow. My next tip is hire a virtual assistant that is available during time zones that you are not. If you're working within a time zone outside of your own, a lot of times I work with people on the East Coast and they want me to be on a call at 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning. And that's not usually my work hours. You know, I I don't start my business until 8:30, 9 o'clock out here on the West Coast. However, if you can find somebody who's either willing to work those hours, who can be there at 5 or 6 in the morning to respond and set up the schedule, the calls, or respond to the client, or answer some questions, that would actually help your business also, because you're catching people who are coming from outside of your time zone. And also, you may have some international calls, and it may, you know, behoove you to find somebody who's willing to work late at night and catch calls from other areas of the world. So it depends on what kind of business you have. If it's more, if it's a regional business, then you just want somebody in your area. But if you have a nationwide or international business, think about getting a VA that's accessible during the hours where you're not so much available, so that you're not stressed out by missing those calls and your clients don't feel frustrated because you haven't responded to them in a timely way. And a lot of times, you know, things are not emergencies, but once in a while, you have clients that have tight deadlines, and it is urgent that you get the call and get the whatever it is, the memo, the document out as soon as possible. So it's all about great service and quick response times. That's going to differentiate you as a growing company. And people remember that. People remember not just the product or service you delivered, but they remember the service, the customer service that's come with it. My next tip is the devil is in the details. And there may be a lot of competition in your niche area. And there's always a lot of competition, you know, unless you have some kind of specialized area that is so unique, you're always going to have competition. So don't be in denial that there's no competition. There always is. And it's the little things that will make the difference. So my suggestion is, what, you know, think about what you can do for your client that serves them and doesn't cost you anything or cost you very little. For instance, if you have done something for them and they are appreciative of it, and it's a, let's say, delivered something to them and they're very grateful to you, or you've done some projects for them over a certain amount of time, handwriting a thank you note and sending it to the decision maker that hired you is very effective. Because these days, most people send things by email, you know, they'll type something really quickly, or they'll text something, and it doesn't have as much meaning as an actual handwritten note through the snail mail system. I know when I get a handwritten note from one of my vendors, it is significant. They'll send me a pretty card, say thank you for your business. I really appreciate it. I loved working with you. And getting that feels so good that they took the time out to send that note. Also, besides that, there's the holiday cards. Don't forget that. If you know their birthdays, you know, send them a little birthday card, just showing that you remember them, that this is their special day. If they're really good clients for you, then you may want to send them a holiday gift, or Christmas, Hanukkah gift, you know, something that represents, you know, something that's useful to what they do, you know, very thoughtful. I think that's memorable. They will appreciate that. And or maybe something, you know, they could even put on their desk and enjoy. Or even something like a nice bottle of wine and, you know, something that, you know, they ordinarily wouldn't buy them on their own, like a little basket. I also suggest if you run across articles that are relevant to what they do, send the articles. You know, if there's something online that's perfect, and I do that a lot for my clients, I will forward the article to them with a link to them saying, you know, I saw this article. I think it could be useful to you. and that's memorable. And they know, like, you're looking out for them. Another one would be a great referral to another vendor. For instance, in my case, I work with CFOs, I work with accountants, I work with recruiters, and I'm happy to refer out any client that I think could use my connections, happy to make a referral so that they can go forward and achieve what they need to achieve with that other vendor to provide services that I don't provide. I don't do the financial statements and accounting or private placements, and those I would refer out to the appropriate people, to attorneys or patent attorneys if it's something where they need a patent. So that's another avenue that you can take to go out of your way to help your customers. Also, if they need CME or CLE training, that's credit for medical education or credit for legal education, if there's something that you can offer where rather than getting, that allows you to get paid, but to teach them where they can get actual credits, accreditation, and arrange for that with their head of their company where they can get actual credits for their education, which is true for also financial advisors and other disciplines as well. That's another thing that you can do to help your client out, is giving them the training and allowing them to take the credits. These are just a few examples, and you probably can think of more that are specialized to your area. So these are the 7 tips that I give you, but I have so many more that I have learned over the years that could be helpful to you. And if you're interested in working with me, you could always contact me at thebalancedmillionaire.com on my contact page, or email me at info@thebalancedmillionaire. I'm happy to talk to you for a free consultation for 30 minutes or so to learn about your business, to maybe make some suggestions. Let's talk about where you're at, where you want to be, and how I might be able to help you and support you in that as a executive business management consultant. And we have also some special tools that we use. I use my life coaching tools. I also use LinkedIn to help you to grow your business and find whatever you're looking for. If you're looking for clients, if you're looking for people to do some collaborations with, I also have connections that I have found useful that are investors or associated with investment groups or financing. So let's talk, and feel free to call me. Also, I welcome you to email me with any suggestions for this show. If you would like to make some suggestions, or if you would like to be a guest on this show, again, email me at my attention and then send that to info@thebalancedmillionaire.com, and I will take a look at what you have to offer. If you're interested in an interview on my program, and we'll connect that way. Or if you want to do a consultation, just go ahead and email me. So anyway, I'm going to wrap this up. I've enjoyed talking to you. I hope you've learned something. You can download my email book at www.thebalancedmillionaire.com. It's free. And I will be also offering some other free tools in the future through my website. So if you want to get on my list, I have a community that I've built up of about 350 people, and I'm continuing to grow that list. It's growing rapidly. I do have a lot of LinkedIn followers as well. I have like 14,000 LinkedIn followers, but I would prefer if you can get on my list through my computer as a contact. I will send you more information, because that's the easiest way to connect with you. So thank you very much for listening to tonight's program. And I wish you a nice evening, and I hope you got a lot of information out of this show. Thank you. It's Eileen Mendel with A Balanced Millionaire. Tune in every other week on Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. And we go live at 6 and have a conversation. Our mission is to help business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives to scale their businesses and find out how they can deal with various situations that crop up in the workplace to help them have a more successful and prosperous business, as well as quality of life. Take care.
Former highly paid corporate insider and expert in scaling businesses for over three decades, Eileen Mendel is a serial entrepreneur, business consultant, renowned speaker, and author. Tune into The Balanced Millionaire on bbsradio.com weekly on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to learn the secrets to working fewer hours and achieving financial breakthroughs, increased revenue, and prosperity while maintaining personal and professional balance and harmony. You can also hear us on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Spotify. To schedule a private consultation about your business, call or text 760-450-6133 or visit InnerEdgeInternational.com. 760-450-6133 or visit InnerEdgeInternational.com. Thank you for tuning into The Balanced Millionaire with your host, Eileen Mendel, CEO of InnerEdge International, business consultant, multimedia marketing expert, renowned speaker and author. Connect with Eileen Mendel, The Balanced Millionaire. Increase your confidence, creativity, balance, awareness, direction, motivation, and catapult your business to the next level and beyond.